Welcome to Inside UMiami Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Henri Ford, the Dean and Chief Academic Officer of the Mills School of Medicine. I am delighted to continue part B of our fascinating discussion with Dr. Raymond Shinazi and Dr. Mary Stevenson that started earlier when we focused on the amazing work, the pioneering work of Dr. Shinazi and finding a cure for HIV. We know that his drug discovery has led to a significant improvement in more than 94% of individuals affected with HIV are currently using his drugs and have essentially found an effective cure. Although we know we don't have the permanent cure, but this is a functional cure. It has stopped the in utero transmission of the virus and so many other things. And so we recognize Dr. Shinazi's tremendous legacy. But Dr. Shinazi has also done extensive work when it comes to hepatitis B and hepatitis C. And so this portion of our podcast is going to focus on that particular work. So tell us a little bit about where we are and how you came to finding a cure for hepatitis C.
Yes, it's a good story because, you know, that was one of the diseases at the time called non-A, non-B in the early days because nobody knew what it was. And finally, of course, as you know, three Nobel Prize winner, one for discovering hepatitis C. And it wasn't too long ago. It was in our lifetime. These giants in the field of virus hunters, I would call them, they actually were capable of identifying what we call non-A, non-B. 1989, not too long ago. It was a big problem. People were not dying of not dying from liver disease necessarily, but they were suffering what we call liver fibrosis. They had liver fibrosis leading towards cancer, and if you didn't get a transplant, you would die. So we decided to form a company called Pharmacet, based in Atlanta, Georgia, that was focused primarily on discovering drugs for HCV, hepatitis C virus. We worked very hard the first couple of years. We were actually working on HIV too at the same time, but the real focus was on something that a lot of people wanted, which was a cure, a potential cure for HCV. The reason why you have a potential cure for HCV is there's no latent form for HCV. In other words, the virus cannot hide like HIV or, for that matter, hepatitis B virus. So the moment you destroy the virus, that's the end of the story for the virus. So we worked very hard on nucleoside analogs again, and we got a few hits using the technology I just described, which facilitated discovery from our library of compounds. And that led to today a compound called sofosbuvir and or Sovaldi. This compound is a curative drug. Within 8 to 12 weeks of treatment with this drug, usually alone or in combination with another class of anti-HCV compound, you get a cure, complete cure. Otherwise, you don't get reactive. The virus is gone forever, unless you get reinfected. And that's another reason why we should develop a vaccine against hepatitis C. And people are working on that as well. But literally, if you get it clear for your body, that's the end of it, end of story. So we were working on this, and we moved it was done within a company, an Emory startup company, very successful. We got a drug that worked in culture and actually worked in humans. So initially, I think the data was presented at the European Association of Liver Disease in what they call EASL in Europe, in Berlin, I think it was. And I tell you, the hall was packed. And we presented data where we're getting what is known as a sustained virological response of more than 80%. We never heard of that before. 80% sustained virological response at, say, 24 weeks of treatment, after treatment. Basically a cure, SVR, what we call SVR24. It was usually SVR8 at 8 weeks, and 24 weeks, it's a cure. You couldn't hear a pin drop in the audience. I actually couldn't get into the auditorium. It was so packed with people. It was very exciting. So we actually called it, we had a meeting of the company at the time in Berlin, I think it was, and we called it Perfectovir. Or somehow the drug was a perfect drug because it actually worked as expected, but it was so much excitement among the hepatologists and gastroenterologists about this discovery.
Game changer.
Yes, it was a big game changer. Nobody had ever cured such high rate of cure using just monotherapy or monotherapy at the time with interferon, which was the best thing available at the time. Interferon, as you know, has its limitations
and complications
as well. So here's one part of the story. Now, you remember the first part I talked about me being born in Egypt.
Absolutely.
So I have my meeting in 2020. I think it was 2012. I go to my meeting in Hawaii. I have a meeting called HepDART, Hepatitis DART. DART, you know. And it's very well attended by a lot of gastroenterologists, a lot of hepatologists, and also infectious disease people. At the end of the meeting, I got a call from the Consul General of Egypt. We want to meet you right away.
Now, the son of Egypt? Or?
Remember, I left Egypt under bad circumstances. I was basically, my parents were kicked out. Everything was taken away from them. But I had no grudges. I told you it was an adventure. I actually am grateful to Egypt for kicking me out. I wouldn't be here today were it not for Egypt kicking me out. So I thank Nasser in a way. I actually cried when he died. He's a great man. And he's regarded very highly in the Arab world. But, you know, he did what he did. He was a strong nationalist, and he didn't want any Europeans present there at the time. So clearly, they called me. I was completely surprised. I thought maybe they were going to give me back my money, the money they took from my parents. Because this phone call, you know, never heard from them for 45 plus years. I never heard from them. And they say, we must have you back in Egypt soon. I said, why? Well, we want you to talk to us about your cure. We want the drug that you have discovered and developed. And we heard about it, and we want to know more about it, and please come over. Actually, it was the military that invited me. And the military invited me because they had a lot of soldiers dying of hepatitis C. So I discussed it at the time a little bit with my friends, should I go back, not go back, but I said, wow, I'm going to make an impact, let's go and do it, see what we can do. You may not realize that, but in Egypt, we have 1 in 5 people are infected with hepatitis C.
Why is that?
Oh, schistosomiasis. That's a problem actually that Nasser created. He basically tried to treat everybody for schistosomiasis, and they used dirty syringes. It's a hidden secret, but that's the truth. And infected a lot of people, except maybe the first person who got the injection. He had a clean needle, and you know they were just shooting the needles one after the other. And they're all genotype 4. The great majority are genotype 4. There are 7 different genotypes for hepatitis C. So I actually went to Egypt. I was received royally, as if nothing had ever happened, by the military. The same people kicked my family out, but it was lovely. We had a great time.
Hey, you didn't hold anything.
It's not their fault. You know, it's just the politics at the time. And we worked with them to get the drug made in Egypt and find a way to work with Gilead at the time, the company who made the drug, to get it at the low cost. The low cost meaning $1,000, between $1,000 and $3,000 a treatment, which is still a lot of money.
How many doses per treatment?
One complete treatment. At the time, the drug was costing over $50,000 in the United States. But that's another story. I mean, you got to understand this is a cure. I'm not going to go into pricing, but in Egypt, it was very cheap. And they said, yes, we'll take. How many doses are we willing to give us? And they actually got more than 250,000 doses at that price, which is not too bad. It doesn't cost much. It's not much, really, if you think about it. Let's just see if it works. And it worked, obviously. Of course, subsequently, I worked with the generic people in Alexandria. The guy, actually, who runs the company, he went to the same school I went to in Egypt, younger than I am, and a great guy. His father was a big benefactor to the Egyptian government, the Egyptian people. He helped build a hospital in Cairo, for example. And I worked with him and gave him the formula, basically, how to make the drug and work with his chemist. They make the drug, and today the drug is being sold at $60 or less at a cure. So we've actually cured more than 5 million people of hepatitis C in Egypt so far, to the point where President Sisi, in his wisdom, has, and again, it depends a lot on the leadership. The leadership of Egypt is great from the point of view that Sisi had the right information from his Ministry of Health and people who helped guide the process of getting these drugs to Egypt. And he basically opened it free for everybody in Egypt. You can go to the pharmacy today now, and get the drug over the counter. You don't even need a prescription in Egypt. But you also offer the drug to the neighbors, all the African neighbors, free of charge. That's a great, great thing that he's done, especially where there was no patent involved. So we've done it. I mean, in Egypt, everybody knows my name. Everybody knows who I am. Everyone knows my story. It's an amazing way. And for me, it was important because I needed to go back to Egypt. I needed to heal after what they did to us, to my family. And I'm very pleased I went. I received royally. And the Egyptian people are some of the warmest people. But what you don't know is there's more than 100,000 Egyptians living in, for example, Los Angeles. And the great majority of them have hepatitis C as well. It's not just, and unfortunately, these people are not benefiting as much as the Egyptians over in Alexandria or in Cairo or in Hala Kobra or in Tanta or some of the other cities in Egypt. They're getting the drug in Egypt free, almost practically free of charge, whereas the ones in LA have to pay for it or find a way to get paid. Of course, now we have our leadership in the United States has decided that we got to do something about hepatitis C. We have over 2 million people infected with hepatitis C in the United States. But I'm very proud of what I did in Egypt, and I'm very proud because I also expanded the same thing to the Republic of Georgia. We had the court, they have actually more hepatitis C there than HIV, and mostly through drug abuse. And believe it or not, we were able to do the same deal, but this time we got the drug from Gilead and they gave it to us free. So that's a very nice thing they did, the companies. People, they don't get enough credit for that. And that's wonderful what they did. I think I encourage more companies to do the same thing, especially for countries that cannot afford these drugs.
Dr. Snazi, what a remarkable, remarkable story. I mean, I respected you before, but hearing about your tremendous impact on HIV, and now hearing about your impact, the Egyptian nation, 5 million people cured in tons of other African countries positively impacted because of your discoveries. This is some, we wish we had 10% of that in a lifetime. And you've had it in you've had more than two lifetimes, and you've got knowledge. You've probably,
it's
countless other lifetimes through the impact of your work. And that's just fascinating.
Well, I think the path is well greased in a way from what we learned for the PEPFAR program in Africa, for example. The vision of some of the people like John Martin at Gilead and other leaders. Even our President Bush, of course, gets credit for that as well. We've done some good things, and we hope to continue doing good things.
We said that the President Bush was really one of the most consequential presidents because of PEPFAR. But it's because of your discoveries also that helped, that continue to make a big difference. I want to pivot for just a moment, because while we have been counting all of these amazing achievements, I know that there were times when things didn't go as you expected. I mean, you know, NIH didn't hear about your proposal, didn't get funded. Tell us a little bit about the story of resilience. We have a lot of young scientists, there's clinician scientists who are coming out here who are facing rejection. And how do you turn adversity into opportunity? What motivated you? That's a phenomenal story. Because you go on to help 5 million people.
So
you didn't give up.
So I have file cabinets. I still have file cabinets full of grants that were rejected.
Those exist?
They still exist.
Oh, God. Continue.
It's true. So We have file cabinets full of rejected grants and pink sheets attached to them. And you'll be amazed.
The pink sheets were the comments.
Yeah,
that...
the comments. For example, I remember our first HIV grant where we suggested that we should study HIV in the brain because HIV is known as a lentivirus. Okay, it's, we know lentivirus impact the brain. And the comments were, well, we have no evidence whatsoever that HIV affects the brain. Therefore, we're not going to fund that project. We suggested combination chemotherapy at the time. And they said, no, combination chemotherapy will never work. Don't waste your time. It's not going to work.
It's so fun.
Okay, so I'm just saying, you know, we have a lot of people. So what you need really in reality, have, be a champion for your own science. You have to be your own PR person. Nobody's going to pat yourself on the back. Nobody's going to try to help you, trust me. Unless you have good mentors. If you have good mentors, they will suggest things to you and you should listen to them. And that's important for young people to have mentorship. But of course, you can teach things to young people, but they ignore you because they think they know more than you do. And that's fine if that's what they think they can do about it. At least you give them the best advice you can give. I think mentorship is extremely important in the university setting, especially for young people, postdoctoral fellows, as well as graduate students.
So it was mentorship that said, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to create PharmaSat?
Not quite. This was actually,
that was
it. But I tell you what it was. The grants on HCV, every single NIH grant I wrote, they were focused on immunology. They said immunology is going to cure hepatitis C. They gave tons of money to my competitors in academia, tons, without mentioning any names, for development of different approaches, immunological approaches. Guess what? Today, we don't even hepatitis C is cured by simple, small molecules, and immunology didn't help at all, frankly. What did help was the immune system itself. Your own immune system helps because that clears the remaining virus. But the immunological approach did not work. I think also that may apply to a lot of other viruses. You always turn to immunology. They say, oh, well, if the drugs don't work, immunology will work, or gene therapy will work or whatever. But the end result today is actually a comeback, a big comeback on small molecule, believe it or not.
And in that vein, I'd love to hear your perspective in our remaining few minutes. Hepatitis B continuing to be a problem, and also some of your fascinating work with COVID.
So we decided to work on hepatitis B. We actually invented the first oral drug for hepatitis B, that's lamivudine. We didn't know it had activity against HIV. At the time, another discovery was it also worked against hepatitis B. And we also, another drug that I was involved with, approved by the FDA, is cabivudine. It's a very specific anti-HBV compound.
By the way, how many drugs have you discovered?
Six officially. Six officially got FDA approval, but then we have combination chemotherapy. We're up to about 26 total in the world. So that's pretty good. I was hoping for one. I ended up with more, so I'm blessed. And we're not finished yet. So there's a few more to do. So we embarked on a target. The target, all viruses have something called a capsid, which is basically a shell where it protects the DNA or the RNA. And what we wanted to do is to find compounds that will break up this shell and expose the DNA to the elements, and they will be destroyed, the viral elements. Okay. So they're called capsid effectors. That's what they call capsid effectors. We worked very hard on the chemistry and structure activity relationship, and we discovered a class of compounds that are called glyoxamides. That the first one was a compound called GLP-26, and it was a sub-nanomolar inhibitor, a nanomolar to sub-nanomolar inhibitor of hepatitis B virus. We now have gone by further work. We've come up with a compound that is about 100 times more potent. So we're now definitely sub-nanomolar. Sub-nanomolar. In humans, a 10 milligram dose of the drug brings down the virus load by 6 logs. 10 milligrams, that's how potent it is. The most potent compound on the planet. But we don't use it at 10 milligrams. We're actually going to use it at 300 milligrams in humans. Why? Because we know the virus kinetics. The virus kinetics indicate that the virus can go, you have to go down one phase, first phase, and then there's a second phase, like with HIV. And the problem is getting that phase. So you need a higher dose to get to that phase. And you can do it monotherapy. You don't need a second drug. So they've started clinical trials advanced phase one clinical trials with a compound that we have in the clinic. And we are able, for the first time, to not only decrease the viral load, but also decrease the markers for the virus, which is basically what we know as the HBe antigen and HBs antigen. So they completely eliminate this HBe antigen. HBs antigen is coming down, and it's not yet completely down, but it's still going down. It's now been going on for 2 years. And if you eliminate HBs antigen with elimination, of course, of the virus, you have a cure. So we're aiming for a cure. It may take 2 years, and that's fine. We're talking about 250 million people with hepatitis B. That's a big problem. Glow Circular will go away, and hopefully also the integrated DNA will also go away with time. That's why we need longer treatment.
With that many people, I think 2 years is just...
Exactly. And even if we get 20...
That sounds accelerated to me.
Yeah. So these people now take drugs forever, but this will be... I think there's ways to shorten the duration of treatment if we find some other compounds that we can combine with this. So we're excited about that. It's still early days, but I can tell you we're going into phase two next month.
You know, I know that, especially since University of Miami is the gateway to Latin America and in the Caribbean, and all sorts of pathogens are emerging from just about all over. And clearly there are more pathogens on the horizon. Tell us what the future looks like and how some of your new drug discoveries will better prepare us to confront the next.
Well, virus is not going away. I mean, we just got funded for monkeypox grant, because I think there's a need there, especially for West Africa. There's a huge problem there and still threatening the Western world. Monkeypox people don't, we have vaccine, but it's a terrible vaccine. There's potential recombination that could cause problems and make this explode. So we need to be aware of that, and we need to work on small molecule antivirals and better vaccines for monkeypox, for example. So there are things to be done. There's a lot of things to be done. And we just got funded by NIH on this topic.
So monkeypox is one.
Monkeypox, well, the norovirus, I think, is still a problem, not just for the cruise ships, but also... For Miami, it's very important, of course, and the Caribbeans. But clearly, norovirus is a huge problem in immunocompromised patients. And they will die from norovirus. And we're not talking about, eating at the Mexican restaurant and getting norovirus infection. We're talking about, serious infections where there's no treatment and you have a horrible diarrhea that constantly occurs every single day. You have to be bedridden. It's an awful disease. So there's plenty of virus. Nipah virus. I can name you many more viruses that are important. Chikungunya. Dengue is still a problem. There are drugs coming on board for dengue. That's a good thing, I think. Vaccines has not been very successful.
Well, I can say that speaking from the Miami business and tourism community, we are so thrilled that you are working on this entire
virus. Yeah, we need to have Carnival Cruise standout research.
Okay, I will make sure, because our former chair of the board is...
Well, we'll tell them about the norovirus, please.
Yeah, you'll be happy to hear that. Well, what a fascinating conversation it has been. And thank you so much, Dr. Shanazi and Dr. Stevenson, sitting with me this afternoon on Inside Humanity Medicine. Your insight has been nothing short of sensational. I've learned a whole lot. And more importantly, I'm just amazed about your tremendous impact on the field and the number of lives that you have saved. So please keep working. Keep coming up with those antivirals, because you're a difference maker.
Thank you very much. And I have the gift. I'm very glad that I have this gift. And I hope I can continue. But it takes a village, as you know.
Absolutely. And I hope to be able to welcome you back to a future episode of Inside Your Miami Medicine Podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
It's been my delightful pleasure to welcome today Dr. Shanazi, Dr. Stevenson, and their contributions are just nothing short of phenomenal, especially when it comes to HIV, but also hepatitis C, hepatitis B, COVID and other emerging pathogens. So see you next time.
Thank you.